We've got the Academy Awards, the Emmys, and Grammys. But what should we call the award for the most extraordinary performance by a corporate profiteer? How about the Sleazy, with winners getting a solid gold sculpture of a middle finger? There were so many worthy contenders, but one corporation exhibited uncommon callousness, so the 2021 Sleazy goes to Tyson Foods. The meatpacking giant has regularly run roughshod over workers, farmers, communities, and the environment, not to mention the millions of animals it fattens and slaughters. But the coronavirus pulled out the worst in Tyson's corporate ethic. Last April, its billionaire chair, John Tyson, ranted that health officials who were closing down several of his slaughterhouses that had become hotbeds of contagion were creating another crisis, a national meat shortage. Responding instantly, our corporate compassionate, burger-gobbling president decreed that meatpacking plants were crucial to America's national security and must be kept open at all cost. Trump's edict required workers to return to their jobs or be fired. Only, there was no meat shortage. Indeed, Tyson and other giants actually increased their meat exports to China last year. Meanwhile, COVID rampaged through Tyson's factories. In its Waterloo, Iowa facility alone, a third of the processing workers were infected and at least six died. Which brings us to the corporate play that cinched this year's sleazy for Tyson. Waterloo slaughterhouse supervisors actually knew that the back-to-work order would sicken hundreds, but not exactly how many. So, managers organized a winner-take-all betting pool on the percent of employees who would test positive. It was simply something fun, said one, kind of a morale boost. This is Jim Hightower saying the virus infected more than a third of the workers in the plant. Some fun, huh? The Hightower Radio Lowdown is brought to you by the Lowdown Happy Hour, live streamed from the Chat and Chew Cafe. Details at HightowerLowdown.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it looks like Gun Fetish Barbie's got herself in a little twist. Or at least that's what they're reporting. They're reporting that she paid some of her rent, some utility bills, used some campaign cash. And then I guess paid it back. I guess, you know, but you know, it's one of those things where if you dipped into the till at work and you took the money home to pay your bills and you came back the next day and you paid it back, is that still not illegal? Is that still not wrong? Should you still be punished for it? Now, personally, I think she's just a dimwit and didn't know any better and thought, hey, you know, everyone gets away with all these things that we've heard, so it's my turn to cash in. And then she did it all, and someone said, no, you can't do that, and hurried up, put it back. That's what I think. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out. A lot of people on the Twitter is not so sure that she's going to have any accountability because, hey, we never seem to hold any of those people accountable, especially conservatives. And here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, my favorite reporter in the whole wide world, our good friend Sarah Burris from Raw Story. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, happy Thursday.
So, Gun Fetish Barbie got herself in a little twist. Kind of reminded me of the I'm Not a Witch woman, Christine O'Donnell. You remember she got in a little trouble for...
Oh my God, yeah.
That's the blast from the past, right? She got in a little bit of trouble for paying her rent and kind of making a job out of running for office.
I mean, you can actually pay yourself when running for office.
Right.
There is a limit on it. There's a way that you report it. So it's actually a thing. And I wouldn't be surprised. I thought maybe she paid herself a salary. I'm pretty sure she did. It would have been a report from a long time ago. But totally legal. What she did with the whole, like, oh, I'm going to pay for all of my bills and stuff thing, that's not so much with the legal. And but you're right. Like, the thing is about the FEC is nobody gets held accountable for that stuff. The hope, I think, is that, you know, recently Biden appointed two new people to the board. And so at the very least, they can make a quorum now.
Right.
So I think the hope is that maybe there might be some kind of actual legal framework for campaign finance. I think it would be lovely if we could just pass campaign finance reform personally, but, you know,
I'm all in favor of publicly financed elections. I think even playing field, everybody gets the same money. Let's see if really we're going to make this a business thing. Let's see who does the best with the resources that they can muster and how many people they can, actual people they can get in to volunteer for campaigns and make it truly about representative democracy.
Yeah. And voter to voter contact, like people talking to each other. You know, bringing back the whole idea of neighbors discussing politics with neighbors without trying to kill each other. You know, the little things in life.
The little things in life. Ah, yes. But if you've got neighbors...
Norman Rockwell of play.
But no, I mean, we can't seem to agree on anything. And I just had a conversation with somebody earlier today who said, you know, you remember when we used to be nice to each other? When you'd wave to your neighbors and your neighbors would wave back. Remember that? Remember on the highway, if you let somebody go, you'd wave to them and they say thank you instead of flipping you the bird. You remember those days? And I'm going, yeah, COVID's kind of made us forget how to be decent human beings.
I know. It's weird because, I mean, I live in D.C. in an apartment building. My house back in Oklahoma, I had these old neighbors. To one, the guy used to be a fire chief and she used to be a nurse. And so they were like big time union household, big time Democrats. And so it was always really nice, you know, to be around them and be neighborly. And they just went and moved into an assisted living facility. So it's like, man, I lost my damn neighbors.
Yeah, see, I thought that was going. I thought that was taking a different twist. I thought you were going to go. You watch Fox News, and he's got Trump signs all over the place.
No. There's no way. Like they are hardcore. So I'm going to be sad whenever we lose them. You know, forever because that'll be important Democratic votes that we're losing.
Not that there were great people and you loved having them around, just because we need the votes, right?
They were so great to my grandfather too. Oh my gosh, they're the best people.
Yeah, I wish them well. I got to get your thoughts on the salad dressing. You know, if we really are putting the vaccine in salad dressing, I already got the shot, so I don't need it. But you're missing a whole demographic because even when I eat salad, I never put salad dressing on it because it just looks nasty. But according to Mike Flynn, you know, we're gonna be tricking people who are guzzling the ranch salad dressing, I guess, huh?
So my favorite term that I learned today was flinigarette, which I think is brilliant.
That is good.
I was talking yesterday about, I hope this means that we can get some hearings about the Hidden Valley and find out what's really going on in the Hidden Valley.
Yeah.
Why is it hidden? Why do you need to be hidden to make ranch? Inquiring minds want to know.
And is it really Paul Newman's own? Is it really Paul Newman's own recipe? Is it really him?
Did he make it by himself? Is that his recipe? Do we know for sure?
Is Paul Newman behind the COVID virus just to sell more salad dressing? I mean, how crazy this stuff could get?
He was a big, huge Democrat. So, I mean, that could be, you know, a logical jump. But all of this is coming from a study out of UC San Diego where... The scientists are trying to merge the vaccine with vegetables or with like edible plants in general.
Right.
The point is that you have to store vaccines, at least the mRNA vaccines like Pfizer and Moderna, those have to be stored at sub-Arctic, you know, super cold temperatures. So if you're talking about trying to vaccinate people way out in rural areas in the middle of BFE and Africa, up in the Himalayas. I mean, like, there are a lot of people who live further outside of, you know, normal cities and suburbs and small towns and villages. And so accessing those drugs without having a cooler for it is a problem. So the hope is that scientists are trying to make it so that it can survive in these plants or in these vegetables, so that it can live at the vaccine can live at room temperature. That somehow jumped from they're putting it in vegetables to the vaccines in your salad dressing surreptitiously by Democrats. And I'm just like, how do you get there? Like, I don't even know what the direction, like how you would make that jump to Flinigarette, but apparently that's where we are now.
No, I mean, it's perfectly logical to me. I mean, if you've ever played telephone with someone like my grandmother who couldn't hear half the things, you would tell her something. She would tell somebody what you said. It wasn't anything close. So I can see how it goes around the room and comes back to, you know, what you said to then ending up with what Flynn said. And this is the problem with our corporate-controlled conservative media. Mm-hmm. They just want to get people all riled up and all bunched up in the panties so they stay all foaming at the mouth and stuff because government's coming for you.
And it doesn't make any sense. Like, I mean, the fact that you, can you just imagine somebody reading this being like, what the hell? You know, like you would think that someone would look at that and be so shocked and want to investigate maybe what the truth actually was.
No.
And no, of course not.
No, why would Mike Flynn lie?
Apparently I'm the only one who was like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah, we talked about that last night. And, you know, because I saw that and I go, you know, I'm amazed at how people get to these places. Where, you know, I saw the value in it. You go, okay, well, we're gonna figure out how to put this in there, store it, do all that. And my mindset is they're not going to sneak it into you. They're going to tell you it's in there. But my conservatives know.
I mean, honestly, if Republicans want to own the libs by not eating salad anymore, I have no problem. Just you do you. Who am I to judge?
I'm with you.
Obviously, they're already trying to own the libs by dying, so... Whatever.
And I'm with them on that. Good luck. Please own me.
I just want to throw your hands up. I'm exhausted of trying, you know.
You know, there's something wrong with society when Howard Stern is the voice of reason. When Fart Man, when Fart Man is the voice of reason.
He, bless him. He, I think he's mellowed a lot in his old age.
No, I'm a huge Stern fan. Understand. I've been a Stern fan for decades now. But when this is the voice of reason, the rest of society, we got problems.
But I'm impressed. Like, he's willing to stand up to some of these guys and like Joe Rogan and say, look, you know, you're crazy and you're reckless and you're hurting people by doing, you know, by spreading these lies about the vaccine and more people should get vaccinated. And, you know, I just wonder, what his audience looks like and how many of those people haven't been vaccinated and if they would even trust what he would recommend to everybody. But the more people that we have that can push the importance of vaccines, I guess the better. No. I don't care who they are.
No, but what's interesting is, you know, I said this the day that Joe Rogan came out and said that, you know, he got it and he threw the kitchen sink at it. And I said from the beginning, I go, this is bad. This is bad messaging. This is terrible because not everyone is going to have the resources of a Joe Rogan. Not everyone is going to be able to get the medical grade ivermectin with a doctor to oversee its implementation. Not everyone's going to get the Regeneron. Not everyone's going to get the right doses of this. What you're going to get is you're going to get lug nut down at the Tractor Supply going, hey, they got ivermectin, 2-for-1. I can take them both. And that's a problem.
Remember when people were trying to find hydroxychloroquine and they figured out it was in like some kind of fish aquarium cleaner thing? And so people were taking aquarium cleaner and it's just like, oh, you fools. Like, this is not, it's not how this works.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there were a couple of people who drank the bleach, man. And I'm sure there were a bunch of people experimenting with lights in different orifices. I'm not getting into it.
Every time I think about somebody sticking a light up their bum, I just want to put a bulb above my head and go like, I have an idea. Don't put light bulbs in your bum.
Yeah, that's one of those. That's where Gru from what was that? Oh, come on, Gru from the cartoon movie, Steve Carell. He said light bulb. Love that light bulb.
From
yeah, that. Everyone tweet at me what that was. With the little minions, with the little yellow guys, you know.
And he was like
Crew.
He was doing a fake accent.
Move on.
But I know what you're talking about.
Let's move on. Evidently, Trump had kind of admitted that maybe his tax returns are maybe, true.
Yeah, that's the best story of the week, is that Trump kind of just screwed himself. So whenever all this, the story about his tax return came out and everybody was like, oh my gosh, you know, is this true? Is this valid? And he's like, fake news, no collusion, you know, all of the things that he says, and tweeted about how the story was wrong. And I think his lawyers like came out and said, you know, we're going to sue the New York Times for lying about this and, you know, all of that stuff. Well, now he is suing the New York Times and his niece for surreptitiously obtaining these stolen tax documents. And it just makes you think that, like, okay, well, if you're saying the tax documents were stolen, then that's you saying that they're real, which proves that the whole story was real to begin with.
Right.
And I mean, what's funny about this is you know, his niece has been basically calling this crap and a few other things, but the thing is, she got the information from her attorney. So whenever they were in this lawsuit with the whole family and Fred Trump Sr.'s money and all of that stuff and the battles over that, I think Trump had to submit a whole bunch of his tax documents for the Trump Organization and maybe a few other things. To look at how much money he got and, you know, how much of it was from his dad and all of that. So those documents were given to the court and her attorney had them. So it's not really stealing if your attorney has the documents that you took.
Right.
So
now, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know what the parameters of turning those over, if there's something that they can only be used for that proceeding. I don't know any of that. But you're right. I mean, you can't say it's all fake news, it's all a lie, and then go, oh, well, I used it in a court proceeding. And then, you know, the suing I get, but you can't have cake and eat it too.
Yeah, exactly. You don't, but that's what he loves to do. He loves to have his cake and two scoops as well.
There you go. Now, what's interesting is there's a bunch of stories here this last couple of days of how Trump's basically hemorrhaging lawyers, where nobody wants to represent him, one, because they see that they'll probably never get paid. And, you know, look at what he did to Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani's career. I don't know that you want this on a resume, but one of the stories that you put out said that he actually, and if this is true, I got to know that he's actually using, what is it, like a parking garage attorney?
One of the clients, I guess, for this attorney, the main client was somebody working for some parking garage companies. You know, it just seems to me like you would maybe want to have somebody who's an expert in the kind of litigation that you're working on, like libel suits or political.
Okay, so he is an attorney. Let's get that, because at first I'm like, maybe it was just a guy who was working in the parking garage.
No.
So he's actually an attorney who represented parking garages.
Yes. So a step up from that.
Okay.
A nicer parking space up from that. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a legitimate attorney who has passed the bar. And I don't know if this is the last person he can come up with, but it seems like he's really scraping the bottom of the barrel with this guy.
Yeah. And he's going to need it, because now we find out that the employees at Dominion Voting Systems, now that this memo has come out, could possibly, you know, could sue him over what now appear to be obvious lies. Because now, I mean, this smoking gun 2-page memo basically, in my view, says they knew from the start there was no fraud. There were none of these gimmicks, which is why even as bad as Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani had been, they didn't actually take any of that crack pottery into a court of law and swear on the Bible to its veracity. They were at least smart enough not to do that. But it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, because this is one of those lawsuits where, if obviously I think this is the smoking gun for Dominion. This may just be the only thing that they need to basically prove that the campaign, that everybody affiliated with Trump knew that this was all a complete lie. It is the big lie. And if that's been true, them attacking Dominion means that they are liable for that. And they've I mean, this company is suing each of these people for like, what was it,
$1.3 billion.
It's a ridiculous amount of money, but it makes sense because that's how much their company is worth. And they're saying, you know, basically you have caused our company to now become synonymous with, you know, election fraud. And that's the entirety of our company. So it, you know, it makes sense. But then at the same time, a lot of people who were working for Dominion, there was the class action, or there was a lawsuit from one of the contractors from Dominion who was being harassed by people, and that guy sued and won. So it just begs the question, can other employees then sue? I asked a couple of other attorneys as well and haven't heard back whether it means that some of those elected officials at the county and state level could also sue because they were being harassed and attacked and at the same time that all of this was going on. So can you link that back to Trump, or is that too far removed?
Yeah, elected officials, are really hard to sue like that, I would think. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But, you know, I'm looking at it and I'm going, you know, thanks to Trump. And I talked about this yesterday. I don't think the MyPillow guy and Rudy were read in on, you know, what the real game was, because they were out there like true believers holding, you know, ridiculous, you know, kangaroo court hearings. We got a state senator here, Doug Mastriano, who held that super spreader event down in Gettysburg so that, you know, we could listen to Trump on the phone for 45 minutes spew on nonsense and lies. You know, I'm looking at the MyPillow guy going, he's going to need one of those dog beds because he's going to have nowhere to sleep after Dominion gets rid of him. And Rudy's going to have to shave in public because, again, he's not going to have anywhere to shave instead of out in a restaurant somewhere like they nailed him the other day.
Oh, my God. That was so sad and pathetic. But, yeah, I mean, if you will have to be able to prove that these guys were in on it as well. I think for sure Rudy Giuliani is. Mike Lindell was at the White House when all of this was going on, so I don't understand how he wouldn't know. But you're right, he just is such a true believer in all of this. It seems he's just, I don't really understand that.
He's the dupe. I mean, you've done things with friends where you got a group of people together and you go, don't tell so-and-so. And everybody's kind of in on it. And it might be a little mean. Or at least, do they do that anymore? When I was younger, we used to do horrible stuff like that. And stuff I can't say on the air, but you know, we used to do bad things like that, and one person was always sadly the butt of it. I see this as what they did to Rudy and Lindell. I do. Here, lose all your money, lose all your credibility, so we can goof on you at the golf outing next year.
Oh my God, that would be so sad. But it would make sense for Donald Trump. Yep. But I mean, of all people, I think Rudy should know. I mean, he can't be that dumb, right? Annie?
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know. Now, interesting, Joe Biden is actually considering releasing some information. You got a story on this about January 6th. This would be, you know, something that has never happened in my lifetime, that an administration is looking backward at the previous administration and actually going, you know what, that's a bridge too far. Look, I was arguing back when Reagan was in office that they should have gone after Reagan and Iran-Contra and all that stuff. And when H.W. Bush left, I was going, yeah, still, Iran-Contra, all that stuff. What did he know? When did he know it? All of the lies that, you know, around the aluminum tubes and what got us into Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And now, maybe, possibly.
Yeah, this is one of those things where it's, you know, normally you don't have a president willing to waive executive privilege. What Biden is saying is that executive privilege doesn't extend to criminal cases, which is actually what the court decided in the Nixon case. So there is a judicial precedent for that. And what Biden is sort of saying is that when it comes to January 6th, that's the ball game. Like, that's where the line is if you're trying to overthrow the government, if you're trying to, you know, commit a crime, then this is obviously, you know, I'm waiving executive privilege.
Yeah, if you've got a two-page...
That's as it should be.
Yeah, if you got a two-page memo,
right.
If you got a two-page memo with 6 points on how you're going to overturn an election, maybe we should look backwards at that a little bit.
Maybe. And what's crazy is so many people haven't even really reported on that. There was no story in the New York Times about it. Cable media has been spending so much time talking about the crisis at the border that, you know, very few people are talking about the seriousness of this memo. And it, and this guy, this lawyer, is a professor. He's a law professor who is speaking, I think, next week at the American Association of Political Scientists or something like that. And you're just like, how is this guy even still a lawyer?
Yeah.
So, you know, this is where we are now.
I got to be honest with you, though. I read through it, and it sent chills down my spine because I could see how it could have played out. And I know that my conservative friends would have been all on board. The founding fathers did this. This harkens back to the days of the trifold hats. And they would be 100% behind it. And Democrats would scream and holler a little bit. Some would get a little more so. But I think they would have ended up eating it and going, oh, you're going to follow the rule of law. And we could have potentially, without Dan freaking Quayle, we could have had 4 more years of Trump.
It was Dan Quayle and apparently a conservative judge that Pence reached out to. That judge is speaking out about what his conversation was. We didn't really know that much about the judge until the Woodward and Robert Costa book came out. And so now that judge is sort of coming forward and explaining what he told to Pence and how he basically said, you know, if you do this, this is going to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court is going to say no. This is a very easy case for you to understand.
Are we sure? See, this is where the whole thing hinged. Are we sure that the Supreme Court would have? Because we've got a Trump court. We've got a very conservative court. You know, 3 of the appointees were his. One of them stolen. I don't have faith in the Supreme Court, and I don't care what Amy COVID Barrett says. I don't care that she thinks that they're not a bunch of partisan hacks. They are. And it is what it is. So I guess I don't have the kind of faith that person had in our court.
I get that. And I hear you for sure. There, whenever they took a bunch of those cases and asked the Supreme Court to intervene, every single one of them, the court said no. They would not overturn the lower court cases. There weren't a lot of them. Those, you know, the Pennsylvania case and the, you know, all of those, like, oh, at least hear us.
Yeah, because there was nothing there, Sarah. There was really nothing there. There were no real true allegations. There was no real case that they put on. This would have been, you know, look, they made up the idea that there were, you know, electors that were, you know, there were 2 sets of electors, which didn't happen. But they made it look that way. And if they could have pressured Georgia or Arizona, I don't know. I don't know. I'm glad we didn't have to.
I think there would have been enough evidence for the court to just be like, no, this is obviously, there's no way this can happen. I mean, we even had the recordings at that point of the of Trump on the phone with Raffensperger and the old district attorney and those people. So yeah. I don't know. I want to be hopeful at the very least about one of those things.
Yeah, but here's the thing for me, and this is where we'll finish this here. The fact that Mike Pence had to reach out to Dan freaking Quayle and a conservative judge and not, I'm the vice president of the United States. This is wrong. This has never been done before. This is a bad idea. Historically, I'll be remembered as, you know, as a treasonous backstabber. And his first reaction, I should probably talk to somebody. That's kind of, I don't know. That's kind of too far for me.
That sounds 100% like Mike Pence, being a smarmy, squirrely little dude. that sounds like who he's always been.
There you go. And finally, it looks like we're going to be partying like it's 2009 through 2016 here very soon, as the debt ceiling is back, baby. The end of the economy, looking into the abyss. Republicans are taking us to the ticking bomb, it looks like.
I'm so sick of this crap. I mean, one of the stories that I did write today talked about how we have been here so many times before. And every single time, it's the exact same situation where Republicans are literally holding the economy hostage. And that's what Nancy Pelosi described it as today. And that's exactly where we are again. And it's just absurd that this keeps happening. They rose the debt to $7.8 trillion under Donald Trump and and raise the ceiling three times. And Biden's budget bill, you know, while it does add a little bit to the deficit, a lot of it is paid for.
Right.
A ton of it is paid for. And it's not, this isn't, you know, something where Biden's like, oh, this whole plan is my human infrastructure plan. This whole thing is the actual American budget with some of the human infrastructure stuff tacked onto it. So this is not, you know, this is about keeping our government paid for and all of our, you know, agencies and military and all of this stuff taken care of.
Yeah.
So no, I don't get why Republicans are fighting this again.
Because it's politically in their favor. We can make Biden look bad. We can make it, put all the spending that happened in the last administration on them. See how big that number is. And they can use it for politically, and also they can steal the news cycle and slow everything else down. Democrats are spending a lot of time and spinning the wheels to get this passed, and they're not pushing for all of the things in the Build Back Better plan that they need to be outselling. This is busy work. Conservatives and Republicans understand how to get Democrats to do a lot of busy work because they've been doing a lot of it to us over the last 30 years. Going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
I think this is one of those things where every single time they do this, they lose. Like, Americans blame them. They're not that stupid. Like, people see this for what it is. And every single time, it's their fault. And they get blamed for it. And their poll numbers go, beep.
And well, good. You know,
deservedly so.
Deservedly so. But, Sarah, I appreciate the time. As always, I appreciate the work you do. Fabulous stuff over at rawstory.com. Hope folks will check out the website, rawstory.com. Make sure you check out Sarah Burris and the work that she does. Sarah, I appreciate the time, as always.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Good stuff, our good friend Sarah Burris. Again, make sure you check out the website, rawstory.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Ladies and gentlemen, we cannot afford to waste any more time. Let's get to work.
President Biden pushes for unified climate action at UN. China vows to end international financing of coal plants. Plus,
as of today, Illinois is a force for good, for an environmental future we can be proud of.
Illinois passes landmark clean energy and climate law.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
In California, wildfires have been spreading like, what's something that spreads fast?
Oh, I know. Herpes. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, a lot of talk about climate, a lot of talk about climate action at this week's UN General Assembly.
Yes, there was. And in his first address to the United Nations General Assembly this week, President Biden called for nations of the world to unite for collective action on COVID-19 and climate change.
In my view, how we answer these questions in this moment, whether we choose to fight for our shared future or not, will reverberate for generations yet to come. Simply put, we stand, in my view, at an inflection point in history. This is within our power to meet these challenges, to build a future that lifts all of our people and preserves this planet.
But such unity is elusive, in part because of mounting anger at the failure of wealthy countries to meet their pledges to mobilize $100 billion a year to help developing countries cope with the ravages of climate change and build green economies. So Biden announced that the U.S. will double its contribution to the International Climate Aid Fund to more than $11 billion annually by 2024. However, the increased funding requires congressional approval.
I was just going to ask. He can't do that on his own.
Nope. Another big announcement at the UN came from Chinese President Xi Jinping, who announced that China will end financing of new coal-fired power plants internationally.
Nice.
Now, while the move does not address China's plans to build more coal plants at home, energy analysts say it is still a huge blow to international financing of coal, because more than 70% of all coal plants built today rely on Chinese funding. Mm. The shift indicates that international pressure on China to do more to cut emissions is working. Scientists say that ending the burning of coal everywhere is necessary to avoid catastrophic climate impacts.
And it's got to be done soon.
And it matters because nature is not playing along. New research finds that unprecedented wildfires across the entire northern hemisphere this summer set new records for carbon dioxide emissions. Now, scientists say forest regrowth can eventually pull that CO2 out of the atmosphere again, but only if that forest fully recovers before it burns again. Here in the U.S., a new study shows that fires in the U.S. West are burning at higher elevations than ever before because of climate change. Researchers found that rapid snowmelt and critical dryness are pushing wildfires ever higher, burning terrain that previously was too wet, exposing an additional 31,000 square miles of U.S. forests to fires at higher elevations.
Oh, fantastic.
In other news, extreme heat is the number one cause of weather-related fatalities in the U.S. by far. So the Biden White House has announced that OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, will establish the first ever federal safety rules to protect workers from increasingly dangerous and common extreme heat events, and it will cover both outdoor and indoor jobs.
Well, that's not a moment too soon.
Some good news. Michigan's Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer announced this week that the state will be the first in the nation to construct a segment of road that will charge electric vehicles while they're driving.
Oh, very cool. I've been waiting for this. And in a related matter, really, there is no reason in the world that we couldn't run solar panels along every bit of highway in this country, correct?
Correct.
It just takes the will to get it done.
Yes.
And we ain't got no will.
Ford Motor Company says it is partnering with battery recycler Redwood Materials to create a closed-loop domestic supply chain for the production, recycling, and reuse of electric vehicle battery materials, reducing the need for imports and preventing further damage from mining. Finally, Illinois has become the first state in the Midwest to set hard targets for phasing out the use of both coal and natural gas, and the first in the Midwest to commit to reaching 100% clean energy by 2045. The law includes major investments in environmental justice and boosts the state as an electric vehicle manufacturing hub. Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker cast it as simply good business.
Doubling our investments in renewable energy, making it clear to the world that Illinois is open for business with long-term stable financing to boot.
Well, good for the land o' Lincoln. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, like I said, it looks like Lauren Boebert's going to get herself maybe a little twist. And the Twitter is not overly confident that anyone's going to be held accountable. Now, I tweeted out earlier today that she was going to she's going to get three squares in a cot somewhere. And I said that Moundsville, West Virginia is beautiful this time of year. And immediately someone corrected me and said there is no federal prison in Moundsville, West Virginia. The one that is there is in Morgantown. The Moundsville prison has been closed. The only reason I knew is because I was there in the 80s for a visit one time. And it's a historic place. And it was just when I thought prison, West Virginia, I thought Moundsville. I made a mistake. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, well, will she get any time? Will she get a slap on the wrist? Is this a big deal? I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney, to come talk with us. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick. I am an expert on federal corrections in West Virginia.
Okay. That's why I brought it up. I said, yeah, you would know. So
Morgantown Federal Correction, I can tell you what it looks like. Okay. I can tell you where the mainline cafeteria is, because I've been there, not as a visitor, as a resident.
Yeah, I've never been to that one. I was at the Moundsville one back in the mid-'80s.
Well, it's a tourist attraction now.
Yeah.
You can still go. Yeah, she'd have it to herself if she went. Yeah. It's a tourist attraction now.
We can lock her up in there. So looking at this, we find out that some personal bills were paid through a Venmo account, which I'm like, okay. Right. Oops, it was about $6,600, which kind of, you know, in the area of the mistake that you made on your forms.
Right, 7,000.
So you're looking at this a little differently than I am?
Well, the justice got me on a federal form, which was actually congressional internal form. So it really was, well, yeah, it's federal, if you want to put it that way. Hers is a little different because it's the, same could apply, but it's, the official forms you have to file to the Federal Elections Commission, not internally to Congress, which, unlike the travel documents. I think she paid it back, reversed it, paid it back quickly. So I don't expect that they're going to do anything with her. The worst probably she will get is some type of letter verifying that you have made these, mistakes. Also, I mean, I read through it. There was payments to a guy named Pacheco and I couldn't understand all of that. Now, the Federal Elections Commission is going to have every right to ask, who is he? Why did he receive the payments?
He's the pool boy.
I don't know who it is, but that part I love. You gotta love the national media. You know, can somebody ask?
Yeah,
please?
Really.
Now, I mean, that's ridiculous. They don't ask. They put it in there, the name, but they don't ask.
But they don't ask. Now I've taken the position that I've actually given her a little slack. She doesn't know much. I don't think she's that bright. I know she's not up on election law because, look, it's more than most people can possibly understand. The kind of information that's out there is that, basically, hey, once you become a politician, you can do all this stuff, and they have it in the mind that it's possible. So I believe that she goes, oh, what the heck, we can do this. And then someone said, hey, no, you can't do that. And immediately she went and go, okay, we gotta fix this because this is bad. But I originally think that I think she went and paid it anyway because she thought she could. And then someone said, hey, no, you can't. And then, oops, went and fixed it.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think that's the best explanation for it because if it were a different scenario where they paid a personal credit card, the charges that the campaign made or vice versa were paid, that's an error where the wrong, receipt was submitted. That happens. You got a campaign credit card, you have a personal credit card, and by the way, you have a congressional federal credit card. You have three of them. And, I used to have all three, and you are at a campaign event, you pull out the campaign credit card, you're at an official federal, event, you're taking a flight, you pull out the federal credit card or personal. Now, sometimes receipts could be sent. This could happen to the campaign treasurer, and he or she pays it, and it shouldn't have been paid. So that I understand. That happens. It happens all the time. You correct it. This one, though, was here's the rent, and I'm submitting it to the campaign,
yeah.
And I think you're 100% correct. She found out, oops, I can't do that. Now, people do pay. This is really blurry. They will pay, and she didn't do this, by the way. They will pay rent for an office, in their home, office area, and the campaign is using it, and campaign workers come there, and they'll pay some rent. It's questionable. It's, doesn't look good. But she didn't do that. She paid rent and then canceled it and reimbursed it.
Yeah, because someone asked. I mean, I think that's it. But immediately made me think of, remember Christine O'Donnell, the I'm Not a Witch Woman?
No, not ringing a bell.
She ran for Senate in Delaware. where she had gotten in a bunch of this, where she actually, you know, was making a living off of running for office, because you can take a salary, and that's what she was doing. She was running for office and she was taking a salary, and it was a big deal back, I think 2010 was when that, you don't remember I'm Not a Witch Woman?
No, that was not ringing a bell.
Yeah, Christine O'Donnell was her name.
And she was in Maryland?
Delaware.
Oh, Delaware, okay.
Yeah, you got to look that up. I mean, they spoofed her for a long time on Saturday Night Live. but that's what it made me think of as well. And I don't know if Boebert took a salary or not, but evidently her husband got a nice bump in his salary, which I do think needs to be looked into.
Well, and here's going to be the problem with the Federal Elections Commission, because it has been so pervasive that relatives are on the campaign accounts. One of the reasons relatives are, to put it on the defense side here, one of the reasons relatives are on the campaign account is you hopefully can trust them. Hopefully, all right? You can trust them, and, you know, they work hours on the campaign, and so then you pay them, you know, a certain fee. So that does happen. The candidates paying themselves, that's a whole different world,
yeah.
You know. That one is really iffy and risky. But also, I think they'll take an account of, you know, how much she increased salaries of relatives if she did that. But this offense she has here, although I completely agree with what you said, somebody said, whoops, you can't do that. You did it, you can't. Her reimbursement quickly after, you know, whoever told her that she shouldn't do it, that's probably going to help her, and they'll come out with a light slap of some type.
Yeah, for me, again, back to the disclosure of the husband's salary, you know, over $1 million in earnings, where they didn't have that kind of income before she became a congressman. I think that has to be looked into, but we'll see where this goes. Let's move down the road. I saw a story that made me really angry today. Yesterday, we talked about the U.S. government buying drones from China. It looks like GM is going to invest $300 million in a Chinese company for self-driving cars, and I'm going, why? In this moment, why would you do this? In this moment of the supply chain being what it is, and in this moment of what we know is coming out of China, why would GM, why would they do this?
Well, you know, it goes back to the same thing. I mean, if it's investing in China, even though China is this new hybrid of capitalism and communism, et cetera, if they're investing $300 million in China, it's because they're going to be able to make more money because of the fact that they're going to pay, you know, China still has slave labor. And it's just, that's the way it is. And if they're making this whole push, which GM is saying, hey, we want new technologies, you know, we're even going to change our logo, they were saying, by the way. Well, if they want to do that, why would they not invest here in the United States? Also, don't we remember in the past how many times GM included said, hey, help me out, I'm in trouble? I don't think they went to the Chinese government, did they, for a bailout?
No. Nope. And this is one of those moments where you go, this is really the wrong time to be doing this, especially
Correct. Since,
you know, the Biden Build Back Better plan has a subsidy in it for electric vehicles made in the U.S. by union companies, GM being one of them. This really isn't a great time for that.
Right. And GM is saying, well, this investment is going to speed up the development of the next generation for all the self-driving technologies in China. You know, and again, they said that, hey, we're going to invest engineering capital, but they just didn't really say they were going to invest it in China. I think it boils down still to greed. It boils down to where they've, you know, made a deal with China, and they're carrying it out. And it again, just like we said about the drones, why could you not make them in, you know, Pennsylvania or Ohio or any state? And just like this technology obviously could be invested in America. You know, they've been doing it in America.
Yep, without
I think
question.
Akron, Ohio had the first car, didn't it? Wasn't it Akron?
Yeah.
If I remember right.
Where the rubber capital had been at one point.
Right, and I think the first self-driving car was up there.
Yeah. No, I mean,
so, greed.
Greed, absolutely. Greed. Finally, we're going to start partying like it's 2009, Bob. The debt ceiling is back, and it's back in a big way. And I find it interesting that that Mitch McConnell forgot about the $7.8 trillion that they tacked on to the debt last time around. But he's barreling us towards the cliff.
Well, they did. They, in fact, you and I have talked about this. They did it in the most unique way I've ever seen it done since I've been following and in Congress, which was to just say, oh, for a couple of years, we don't have to do this anymore. They sort of just agreed, you know, to release it. And they had Democrat cooperation, you know, when they were when Trump was the president. Again, this became the big deal when Obama was president. I've said it 100 times. It was the yawn vote before that, and it became the do or die. But they still made it happen. And now it's going down to the wire of September 30th. It's going to be very, very ugly. McConnell will try to blame it on the Democratic side because they, quote, control the chamber. But we all know the arcane, antique relic that's called closure. This is the perfect example why that has to stop.
Yep.
You know, just imagine if the House had cloture. Imagine that. Oh, you don't need 218 votes. You've got to have 240. You know, it would just be ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. But here's the reason I bring this up is the White House is now telling federal agencies to begin for what's coming. Start preparing for having your funding lines cut off. It seems like, and I know this is just preparing for the possible, but this seems like we may be heading down this road.
Yes, they're doing, you know, what people term the 7-day fire drill, which is to begin 7 days before the 30th to take steps in case, you know, this happens. But I think this is getting closer to, you know, not the usual drama, but it's getting close to actually, it, you know, it might happen. Remember Trump had to shut down, what, 30 days,
yeah.
Was it? Air traffic controllers weren't getting pay. They weren't going to come to work without pay. I mean, there's all kinds of scenarios out there. Even before we get to Social Security, because they will do everything possible, the government, to keep Social Security, you know.
Oh, wow.
There's
a great – thanks for bringing that up.
Mm-hmm.
They shut down on the 1st. I'm going to be in Alaska on the 7th through the 18th.
Okay.
I may not get back.
Yeah, well, that's what happened last time, remember?
Thanks for that.
The air traffic controllers that literally, think about this, changed Donald Trump's mind. That's not easy.
Wow.
To either find or change.
I'm sure my wife and kids will be thrilled to be stuck in Alaska
there
the next couple
go.
Of weeks. Got to look at the positive here. But, Bob, I appreciate the time. As
Thank
always, good
you,
stuff.
Rick. Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. No, seriously. I mean, I've got a gig coming up in Anchorage, and we're going to be taking a little time while we're in Anchorage afterwards to, you know, do a little family stuff, you know, a little vacation, maybe see the Northern Lights, and you know, how often the kids are going to be able to see Alaska? We could get stuck there. That would be my luck. Anybody who knows me knows I live under a cloud, and that would be my cloud. It would be that in a nutshell. Let's take a quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1906. That was the day that Dr. Harriet Louise Hardy was born in Arlington, Massachusetts. She pursued a career in medicine, driven by personal family tragedy. She lost her father to pneumonia when she was only 4 years old. She also lost a baby brother to the 1918 influenza outbreak. Dr. Hardy became an early leader in the field of occupational medicine. She was also the first woman to become a full professor at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Hardy began her career in occupational medicine when she began to investigate the causes of illness among workers making fluorescent lights in factories north of Boston. Many of these workers were women.
Dr. Hardy researched the cases of berylliosis in Lynn and Salem, Massachusetts. The metal beryllium is used in the making of the lights. Inhaling dust or fumes of the metal can be deadly, but symptoms often do not begin to show up until years after exposure. Symptoms include shortness of breath, coughing, and scarred lungs. Dr. Hardy developed the National Beryllium Registry. It was one of the first registries of its kind to track the impact of a chronic health disorder. Her research helped lead to safety measures in the handling of this dangerous metal. Dr. Hardy also worked with unions, including the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Union and the United Mine Workers, to identify and address workplace health hazards. These included substances like lead, mercury, anthrax, and asbestos. She wrote a textbook on the subject of industrial toxicology with another pioneer in the field of occupational health, Dr. Alice Hamilton. Dr. Hardy helped to forge new ground in making job sites more safe and healthy for workers.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I'm looking forward to our trip in Alaska. The last time we were there was, I think, like 2 years ago, 2018, actually. No, and our good friends out there in the Teamsters Local 959 bring us out to do a little motivational speech, a little we do a program from there, a little training. The idea of look, union people got to tell stories. I'm a big supporter of union workers coming out and telling their life stories, because they're important and they're great. Most people think, there's nothing important about what I've done. I talk to people every day who, through the labor that they do, through the contract that they work under, their lives have gotten better. Their kids' lives have gotten better. The opportunities to do other things, that just immense. And, most people don't realize that they've got great stories. And I think it's important, because there's so many people out there trying to define who union workers are, what unions do, trying to tell us that unions don't matter. And wow, it's something we needed, back in the old days. We don't need them anymore. We're better than that now. The reality is we're not. The reality is now more than ever, we need representation in the workplace. Now more than ever, we need a contract to secure our rights. Now more than ever, we need to put things in writing. Every CEO in this country has a contract. Everyone. They wouldn't be stupid enough to go to work for somebody without a contract. Yet we, as working people, we've bought into, we don't need any job security. No, we're okay being at your behest. We're okay being at your will. No, our family doesn't need any of that. That security stuff. We don't need a contract to hold you accountable to us. No, we'll just be accountable to you. That's okay. It's okay. We'll take on all the risk. You can have all the reward. Yes, we completely understand. I mean, see how stupid and ludicrous that is? Yet that's what most people in this country understand as work. Work is an at-will situation for most people. And union members don't have that. They can only be fired for just cause. You got to do something wrong. Which is why people go, you can never fire a union member. Yeah, you can never fire a union member for no reason. You can for cause if you do something wrong. So your life shouldn't be thrown into a shambles because someone's brother-in-law needs a job. Your life shouldn't be thrown into a shambles just because, I don't like you today. So we're going to spend a little time talking about that, the idea of building a culture of unionism, and maybe revisiting some of the history of organized labor and organized work in this country and organized workers. So we're going to spend a little time doing that. I'm looking forward to it. It's a nice break, and it's a beautiful place. Maybe we'll even drive by Sarah Palin's house again, although evidently she's not vaccinated, so I don't know that I'm all that thrilled with that idea. So there is that, but like I said, the last time I was there, I didn't see Russia from her house. Sorry, didn't see it. It just was what it was. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, thericksmithshow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Make sure you follow us on Twitter @RickSmithShow. Give us a like over on Facebook. Also, check us out on YouTube. Subscribe and maybe share a couple of things. Maybe leave a comment or two. Appreciate you being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com.